If we were all the same, life would be boring.
That's Anastasia in Medford. She's one of several people we're about to hear from about what it's like to be different.
I'm sub-threshold bipolar, and I have anxiety. Despite that, I'm still able to be out and be in the community and interact, and nobody would know any different.
Anastasia is a member of the Compass House in Medford. It's a place where adults with mental illnesses get to fit in and find support. We ask people at the Compass House about their educational experiences, how well they can read and write, and how comfortable they are with computers. The answers we got back are all over the map. Anastasia, for one, just completed a master's degree in education. Other people you're about to hear from never finished high school. But one thing all of them have in common is struggles with mental illness. Sanford in Medford summed up another thing they all said.
A lot of people have been told they're stupid for their whole lives. How you can tell somebody that's 6 years old is stupid, I still haven't figured out. I spend a lot of time here talking to people about stop running yourself down. That's come up in every person I've spoken with.
So Sanford volunteers at the Compass House to help people get job skills and find actual jobs. We're going to hear a bit more from him later in this hour. First, I want to welcome two other people on the staff of Compass House back to our studio. One of them is Bryce Harding. Bryce, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Also with us here is Elizabeth Hazelwood, Executive Director of the Compass House. Hi, Elizabeth. Great to see you.
Hi, thanks for having us back.
Yeah. Elizabeth, what does the Compass House do to help people with mental illnesses get more education and job training?
Education is one of those things that's very dynamic because, as you discussed, there's people that have master's degrees and there's some people that read on a first grade level. And so finding people that can come in and volunteer to work with people on all sorts of different tutoring is very important. Also, utilizing the talents and skills of our members that we have to tutor each other and help build whatever it is that they need. Some people want to just learn how to read so that they can go shopping successfully. Other people want to go back and get their doctorate degree. So it's very interesting.
And how many volunteers do you have working on things like tutoring?
We have currently 4 community volunteers that come in on a regular basis and schedule time to meet with our members.
And how many members?
We have an average daily attendance of 22 right now and a total membership of 356.
And these are people in the Rogue Valley, both with mental illnesses and developmental disabilities?
A lot of our they're co-occurring, so a lot of times that's the case. We focus on mental illness. That has to be your primary diagnosis. But along with that, a lot of people also have developmental disabilities.
And as we talked about, educational experiences within that category can be all over the map. What are the skills that people tend to need help with the most?
Computer literacy, that's the number one thing. A lot of our population left school when computers weren't necessarily being used, but now it's everywhere. If you want to get a job, you have to apply online.
If you're just joining us, this is Elizabeth Hazelwood from the Compass House. This conversation includes staff and other people from the Compass House, as you said, over 300 members in the Rogue Valley. Every one of them has their own story. One thing we heard repeatedly, though, is that lifelong barriers to learning tend to arise in childhood.
Well, my mom didn't really care too much about my education. She mainly focused on herself and my other siblings and everything because the school system told her that there was no hope for me and that it would just be a waste of time.
That's Anita in Medford. She said her mom didn't want her to study, but she tried to learn anyway.
Like, I tried to learn how to speak Spanish one time. She found out and took me out to class, and as she was taking me out the classroom, she yelled at me saying that you weren't smart enough, you're too dumb to even know what the heck they're talking about. And at the same time, I had like 29 other kids looking at me like, oh my gosh. And all I could do was walk the hall of shame out the door.
Anita said she thought this kind of treatment was normal.
Because back then, there was no common grounds, people that help people with mental disabilities or families with mental disabilities. Because at the time, my mom had her own disability because come find out, she has schizophrenia. She was bipolar.
Now Anita says she feels like she's come out of her shell. She said she lived most of her life inside of that shell and it only recently changed.
And now I'm out and I ain't going back. I got too much to learn and too much to do.
So Anita did find out that she likes working with computers, and she's found a job. She said she was actually shocked to get it and that she loves it. Elizabeth, how did that all come together?
Anita is one of our members that serves on our transitional employment placement. So what that is jobs that we have in the community with employers that last 6 to 9 months. The staff goes out and learns the job first and then trains members on it. So there's a little extra time. You can take as long as you need to learn a job, and then staff are always available to come back and reteach you if there's new things or things that tend to be confusing or that you just need some more training on.
You said the staff actually goes out and trains on these transitional jobs first?
Yes.
Have you done that, Bryce?
Well, I started at Compass House after Anita had gotten her transitional position, but I actually had her train me on her position.
Anita did?
She did, yeah.
Okay. And how many Rogue Valley businesses are involved in your transitional employment placement
program? Right now, we only have one. That's actually one of the things that we're working on. A transitional employment program is new to the Rogue Valley, and because it is so different, a lot of employers aren't necessarily willing to try. But it's a great service because we staff is not paid for that. And if members can't come to work, they call us and staff goes and works it for free.
What are the kinds of jobs that are ideal for this?
Entry-level positions, we like to have a wide variety. So anything that can be something that can be trained within a few weeks is great. Culinary jobs like dishwashing, silverware rolling, filing, computer entry, those are all really great opportunities.
If you're just joining us, this is Compass Radio on the Jefferson Exchange. It's our regular segment about how Rogue Valley residents navigate mental illnesses and try to find their way to mental health. The focus this hour is education and literacy. Do you have your own story to share? Give us a call, 800-838-3760. You can also email us your thoughts, jx@jeffnet.org. We just heard from Anita in Medford, one of over 300 Compass House members there. Anita talked about being isolated, not being in the same classroom as other kids. In fact, for her, not being in a classroom at all. Is that a common story?
Yes, a lot of our members reported that growing up, they were actually pulled from school because their parents didn't feel like it was a good fit, or that they didn't have the right opportunities, or they moved around so much they didn't get a stable environment.
Have you seen this idea of special ed? Has it changed dramatically in the last decade, in the last 2 decades?
That's hard for me to speak to. I have not been involved in it. I am actually married to a teacher now, so I've heard a lot about a lot of the requirements for students with special needs. And from what I can tell from listening to a lot of our members, there have been some pretty dramatic changes in how we deal with kids with extra needs.
That'd be something I'd love to hear from a listener on. If you work in a school and in education for people with developmental disabilities or special needs, give us a call, 800-838-3760. We'd love to hear from you. You just heard from Bryce Harding of the Compass House. Bryce, you actually did these interviews that we're hearing the snippets from, talking to Compass House members about their educational experiences and where they're at now with computers and with literacy. What were some of your takeaways in conducting these interviews?
One of my major takeaways, I would say, is how consistent the story tends to be. Speaking with Anita, hearing that she was called stupid by her own mom, who had her own diagnosed mental illnesses that she was dealing with, was not too dissimilar from other stories I've heard from other members. And it's interesting that that word stupid very specifically comes up. It tends to be the one that's used rather than, you know, any other synonym. Stupid tends to be just kind of on a loop for these people, and it's something they repeat all the time, and discussing how they've been spoken to as well as how they see themselves, too stupid to do this. Definitely works its way in there and gets stuck in people's heads, and they believe it.
And Elizabeth, what do you think that does to a person throughout the course of their life?
I think it has to directly affect your self-esteem, the way you see yourself, the way that you feel like you can learn. One of the things that is very interesting is how much this comes up. Family systems play a huge role in the support and education and literacy of children and adults. And if you don't have an environment where you can grow and thrive, you're not going to.
Mm. And we're going to come back to that point here. I do want to turn now, though, more focused on computer literacy. And Bryce, you spoke with Mary in Medford. She's part of the Compass House. And again, this is a place where adults with mental illnesses can come together in the Rogue Valley. It's a community and also a community resource center. Mary has a GED. She told us there's no way around the need for computer literacy.
Technology right now is a big part of our lives. No matter what you do, you have to pretty much get on the computer.
Brandon in Medford, another member Bryce spoke with, says that even if you can use a computer, though, you've still got to get to one.
It can be an issue. Like, you can go to WorkSource, but you can only do things that are work-related. You can go to the library, and you can only access their computers for an hour and a half maximum. So, as well as not having access, there's time constraints on some of the accessible computers that are out there.
So, Elizabeth, what are the options for people who want to work on their computer literacy skills or maybe even just need to use a computer to look for work?
That's a lot of what Compass House designs its work order day around, is giving our members the opportunity to learn those things in a couple of different ways. We have people and volunteers that sit down and work directly one-on-one. But then also when volunteering, our members come in and volunteer and participate in the program. And a lot of that program involves computer literacy, tracking our data, making daily newsletters, learning QuickBooks, learning payroll. These are all really great things. And when you do it in kind of a hands-on environment, you learn it naturally and more organically.
Mm-hmm. And what about people who just need help with reading and writing?
We schedule time out with our community volunteers to help with that. We have our focus. So if someone were to come in and volunteer and say, you know, I have a degree in mathematics, we would schedule in the people that want to work directly on those skills with that person.
Mm. So you said you have 4 volunteers right now working on tutoring. And then does that include your membership?
No, those are just community volunteers.
Okay. And so somebody like Sanford, who we spoke with for this segment, he's got a background in human resources and business. And we heard from him earlier, actually, about some of the things he does to help people get into the workforce. He says he focuses on training people, not just what to learn, but how to learn.
I take notes. I've given people here. Here's a nice notebook. Take notes about what? Everything.
I love that. I also take notes as a coping strategy and as a way to do what I need to do. Elizabeth, what are some of the other strategies for teaching literacy skills, teaching critical thinking?
Meeting people on their level. If someone has never operated a computer before, learning, starting with the basics that you and I take for granted, someone may have no idea how to start a computer or how to get on the internet. So you have to start there first before you can teach anything else.
Meeting people on their level. We heard from Anita, for example, earlier. One other thing she said that we didn't play the tape of is how she can't really process information when she's told something, that she needs to be shown something. Is that a common way of learning, that you have to meet people on their level?
Absolutely. And that's why we have the work order day built around that, is so that way we can partner up members and staff, members and community to learn these skills. Sometimes people need to learn how to operate the computer. So they're going to be the ones in charge and staff will be sitting there walking them through it. Other times people aren't comfortable with that and want to observe and learn that way. And then that's fine too. We just switch up the roles.
When you say that term work order day, what does that mean?
So the clubhouse model is designed about a volunteer system. So members come in every day and we have 2 meetings a day. And we talk about the stuff that needs to be done and we have what we consider tasks that people volunteer for. And so we encourage members, if they are wanting to get a job or learn computer skills, to go ahead and take a chance and volunteer to do that position. Even if you've never done it before, give it a shot.
Mm. And are there members who deal with language barriers at the Compass House?
Absolutely. Sometimes that's as basic as, although English may be their native language, not finishing schooling and only having an understanding on sometimes a very elementary level can be a huge barrier to just participating in getting jobs or having conversations with people.
If you're just joining us, this is Compass Radio on the Jefferson Exchange. It's our regular segment about the challenges of mental illnesses. Share your thoughts, questions, and stories. We've got a few minutes left here. You can give us a call at 800-838-3760 or send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. So we've heard from several people who struggle with mental illnesses, men who find support at the Compass House in Medford. Our two guests are staffers there, Bryce Harding and Elizabeth Hazelwood. We've heard from people like Anita, whose mother kept her out of school and called her stupid. People like Mary, who just got a GED as an adult. We also heard from Anastasia, who got her master's degree in education with an emphasis in English as a second language.
Everyone is capable of learning and being successful with the right kind of support. When an individual has failed so many times and they've heard that message, oh, I'm not good enough, whether internally or from others, they come to believe that they can't do anything on their own, that they will never be successful. And at that point, it's very hard to get them motivated to do what it is they might need to do.
Anastasia says separating people in special education is not the answer. What do you think?
They are not always.
I completely agree. Stigma is built around the idea of separation. If people aren't seen as people, then how is anyone going to feel equal or as good as? And when you put somebody in a separate room and say, you can't be with those people, how does that not directly affect your entire self-image?
Mm-hmm. What about the flip side, though, if you're in a classroom and one student is causing a disruption or simply can't keep up with the material as a teacher, especially a teacher that might have 35 kids in your class, 40 kids in your class, how can you be expected to meet the challenges of someone with special needs without isolating them?
I think that's a very good question. And I actually want to use my son as an example. He's in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. And when we went in for teacher conferences, that was something that his teacher shared with me, is there are some people that are a bit more challenging behaviorally. And she was worried about that too. But then we also talked about how that gives the opportunity for children in the classroom to learn that not everybody is the same and that you have to do things kind of differently sometimes. And that's good. It gives all of our students the opportunity to learn how to get along with other people, how to look at life and understand that everybody comes in with a different perspective and how to work together as a team.
Mm. And talking with Anastasia, she says it's society's glitch. What can we do about how society treats people with mental illnesses?
Keep having these discussions.
And in your own work at the Compass House, how do you motivate people, especially people who've gotten a lot of negative feedback over the years and are already kind of in this loop of I'm stupid, it doesn't matter, and maybe they do behave in a way that other people don't know how to deal with it?
Well, I think that... Oh, well, in my experience, one of the best ways to get people out of that is to get them doing something else. Getting people involved in our work order day, sitting with them and teaching them how to do the things that I do every day or that our other members do on a regular basis. Sort of breaking that pattern and interrupting that rhetoric in their head, giving them something, teaching them that they are able to do it. And that they are able to learn is a big first step. And I think a lot of our folks just haven't been given the opportunity to try something and learn it and to do a good job and to be trusted with an important task. But that's what we try to do, and it seems to work really, really well.
Yeah. Could you share any more stories about times you've seen that work when just kind of starting over with somebody, it sounds like, and giving them a fresh start helps them learn something?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and go back to a clip that you played with Mary. She's a wonderful example of how stepping outside and starting to have people support you can help you lead the believing in yourself. She didn't have a lot of computer skills, but was interested and was incredibly isolated. She stayed in her house for quite some time without coming out. Eventually, she started becoming so good at computers that we sent her to class with one of our staff to learn QuickBooks. Mm-hmm. Now, when Bryce's wife had a baby and he was out for a couple of weeks, she managed everything. She ran QuickBooks. She ran the staff payroll. She could go out at any point and get a bookkeeping job. And she is that good. And now she has that self-esteem and she believes in herself and she knows what that looks like. If she wouldn't have ever been given the opportunity to say, you know what, you can do this, she might not have.
Mm. You're making me kind of reflect on these interviews we've heard, not only today, but in the course of this project. And one thing I've heard over and over from people, and Anastasia says it very bluntly in part of the interview, she says, having a mental illness sucks. It just sucks. But what really sucks is the way that society responds to it. Like, I know who I am and I have this burden to deal with, but it's these external forces outside of my control that are kind of, they seem insurmountable versus managing your own mental health, maybe not as much. If you could give advice right now, and you certainly can, what would it be to people as they're going about their day and trying to be as inclusive as they can?
I think it's important to look at mental illness the way you look at anything else. You wouldn't blame someone that has cancer for having cancer. And you wouldn't sit there and list things that they can't do. You would be there to support them emotionally and understand that they're going through a hard time. And mental illness is the exact same way. If you have those conversations about you can do this, what can we do to help you? That's how you bring about change.
And I would like to add, if I could, that I think one of the most important things you can give someone living with mental illness is time. Giving them your time, working with them, talking about people's education, for example. Anita mentioned in the interviews that she had a math teacher who she really liked because he took time out of his lunch to teach her some basic math skills that she wouldn't get otherwise.
And on that note, we are out of time. This has been Compass Radio on the Jefferson Exchange. It's a monthly series about what it's like to live with mental illness. Bryce Harding of the Compass House, you just heard, is a co-producer of the series. Thanks for being here, Bryce.
Thank you.
And Elizabeth Hazelwood also joined us. Thank you, Elizabeth.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you.